da do da ba ba da do da do da 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 do da do. Hello, my name's Susanne. Welcome to the 40th episode of Handmade, from the life of a knitting, singing, writing spinner. This is the fourth ever English episode, where I talk about all the things I've talked about in the last nine episodes. As you probably know, I record one episode in English every time I get a zero at the end. So the 10th, 20th, 30th, and 40th now episodes are in English. And I do a quick recap of all I talked about in the last episodes, which usually isn't that quick because, my usual episodes go on for about 45 to 60 minutes or so. So, yeah. So you won't get everything I talked about, I promise. Still, pull up a chair, get out some knitting or spinning or some such, and I hope you enjoy the podcast. So I'll be talking about my knitting first. What did I do? I finished doing the orange knee socks that I was knitting. I have no idea if I talked about this before. And for me, this has been a long, long, long time back. I looked it up and the last English episode was in February, so 9 months ago. Feels like it was 2 years or so. So I finished those knee socks and I'm really, really happy with them. I haven't worn them a lot, but occasionally. So I originally wanted to make those to wear with my silk long johns that aren't long enough. And since February, I didn't really wear any long johns. So, but I used them quite a bit when out and about wearing a dress with leggings. And then, you know, in the evening when it gets cold, I had my knee socks with me and wore them. They're pretty bright and draw attention to my huge calves, but I don't mind. I love them. Then I did finish knitting the Ruby Sandrilane. This is the Sandrilane pattern by... I have no idea. I will put all the links in the blog post with the show notes so you can look up the patterns. And mostly you can also see the pictures. I have them on my Ravelry Projects page, but I won't put them all in the show notes because otherwise I'll have a huge, massive blog post that will take forever to load. So I made this red cardigan and I have worn it a lot last winter and have already pulled it out this year. The one thing that I'm debating is whether to make any kind of closure or maybe put a zipper in, because I do like wearing it open and loose, but at times it's nice to be able to close it. So I'm not quite sure about that, but it fits well. It already got worn a lot, so I think it was a good decision. I don't know if you remember. This is made out of the yarn that I knitted the wisteria pullover out of. And I love that pullover, but I never wore it because I tend to get too warm on my neck. This is a new thing. I used to wear turtlenecks all the time, and if I didn't wear one in the winter, I'd be totally cold. But now, I don't know, my body chemistry has changed or something, so I tend to get too warm at the neck pretty easy. So cardigans are much better for me at the moment, and not wearing wool on my neck. So this one's perfect. It's very warm. It's made out of Cascade 220. And I like the pattern. It has this beautiful cable going on at the opening, and it's marvelous. Love it. Then I made a blanket because I fell in love with the Op Art blanket on Knitty and decided to make one. This took an astonishingly big amount of yarn. So I kept going back to the knitting shop and getting more balls of yarn, more balls of yarn. And then they ran out and they didn't really want to order more, because every time they order a color, they have to take, I don't know, a kilo of it. So, and it was already March or April or something. So most people don't knit worsted weight in the summer. That's only me. So, yeah, I got, I don't know, two or three balls on the internet. And you can't really see a difference in the color. It's usually with these, this is Lana Grossa, and usually with the these mill-spun commercial yarns, you don't really see much of a difference between dye lots. So that has never been a problem for me, knitting something with balls from different dye lots and then seeing a stripe or something. And I love the blanket. It's maybe just a tiny bit too small, but it's perfect as a lap blanket while watching TV, so you don't get your feet cold. And so I love it. Then I started making a shawl for my aunt because she asked for it. And that's a nice thing, because I had made her a, what was that called? It's an Isolde Teague pattern. It's a damson, yeah. I had made her a damson out of hand-spun corydale. Now, corydale is not really all that soft. So she loves to wear it because it's so warm. She suffers from fibromyalgia, something like that. So she's in pain often, and the warmth of the wool helps her, but she can only wear that on top of, I don't know, blouse or something, so it doesn't touch her skin. And she asked me if I could make her another one that was a bit heavier and bigger, maybe. And I I bought some merino silk fiber in a lovely green and spun that up and knitted her a shawl. And I can't really remember what pattern I used. I think a Mara shawl might be. Yeah, I think it was the Mara shawl. It's a pretty easy thing. It's a triangular shawl. It has a garter stitch triangle in the middle, and then there's like a stocking stitch ruffle at the edge. And I made that pretty quickly because she asked me just 3 or 4 weeks before we were due to visit my parents, and my aunt lives in the same town as my parents, so I was seeing her then. And so I just sat down and spun, and knitted it quickly. And so she was pretty surprised when I had already finished making the shawl for her when we visited, and she loves it very much. And of course, it's much softer than the corydale. It's merino and silk after all. So that was a success as well. Then I decided that I needed to make the Sherman socks by Isolde Teague. So the story is this. There was this weekend in June, I think, when I was supposed to go, and it was a Friday and Saturday with staying at a youth hostel with my son and all his classmates and their parents. I have no idea. It was supposed to be the we celebrate the end of fourth grade getaway or something. So most other classes would go only the children with the teacher for 3-4 days. But the teacher that he had, she doesn't like being totally responsible for the kids while away and staying overnight. So she said, oh, this will be fun. We'll have this weekend. And I wasn't all that thrilled because I had to reschedule 8 students or something like that, because Friday is usually a pretty long teaching day for me. But I thought, well, this is important for my son, so I'll go. And I thought, I don't know, I was a bit afraid that I wouldn't enjoy the weekend after dealing with people all week in my job as a, well, singing and piano teacher and such. I usually tend to spend my weekends holed up, reading, knitting, not talking to anyone but my family. And I love it. But, well, so we went away on that Friday. And I desperately needed something to knit, to take with me. And it, yeah, I wanted a mindless sock, but I was totally bored by doing ribbed socks for my husband at that point. I've been knitting a lot of those, so I'll tell you about them later. And so I thought, oh, I want to knit the Sherman socks for myself. And then I thought I would do them out of a blue-faced Leicester yarn that I had lying around, dyed by Spinning Martha. It's really beautiful, that yarn. And with the yardage, it should have worked with the pattern, but it didn't. So I started it, and the pattern, the yarn didn't work. It was too fine for the pattern, and the colors, you couldn't see the pattern anymore because of the way the yarn was dyed. So, what to do? So I said, oh, I just spin for the socks. So my carry-along project was the spinning, and that went pretty fast. I set out to do a spin 3-ply sock yarn from blue-faced Leicester fiber that I had from Knitting Spiro. And I loved the yarn, and it turned out really well. And I tried to spin a bit heavier yarn than usual for socks, because the Sherman socks require the equivalent of 6-ply sock. And that's sport weight for you. Yeah. So I tried to spin sport weight sock yarn. And I did come pretty close. But then when I knitted the socks, it turned out that I didn't have enough yarn for the socks. I don't know. I had two balls. One was a bit bigger than the other, and I started knitting with that and thought it was the smaller ball, but it was the bigger one. And then I ran out of yarn and thought, oh, no worries. I'll just knit the second sock and then divide the rest. Yeah, didn't work out. So, and then I think I tried again with the smaller needle or something. I knitted the socks two or three times, I think, the pair of it, until I had the pattern memorized. But there wasn't enough yarn. And I wasn't too keen about the pattern with the yarn anyways, and there was no way of getting more of that color. So I had to frog those and made them into made the yarn into Coriolis socks, I think, or Tibetan something from the Cadbury, what's it called, Path to Sock Knitting something, sorry, New Pathway, yeah, that's the one, the first of those. So Tibetan socks, and I love the socks, and they're not all that long, but without the whole pattern thing going on, I didn't have to use as much yarn. So the Sherman socks are still on my list of things to knit, but I'll have to spin some yarn first. Then I started knitting a sweater in cotton for once. I thought this would be pretty handy for summer. This is the L'Oreal cardigan by Isolde Teague from her Little Red in the City book. And that knit up pretty fast. I'm just thinking, yeah, I think I took that with me when we went to visit my parents, and I made big progress on that. Then I finished it and said to myself, oh, I have to weave the ends in and block the cardigan and then get snaps and buttons to sew on. And then I just folded it up and put it in a project bag. And there it has been sitting there for a month until last week. So I can say that right now the ends are woven in. And the next step is to wash the thing and then go and get snaps and buttons and sew those on. So I'm pretty sure it will be ready to wear until next summer. I like it. I love the color. It's purple, reddish purple. And then, what did I do? Let me see. Socks for my husband. I think I made three pairs of those since February, but I'm not quite sure. Sorry. Not quite sure. It could have been two. I think I made one in turquoise and one brown and another in turquoise. And so he told me that those are the socks he loves wearing the most, the best. Yeah, the most. Sorry. So I just do a regular. What's it called? I don't know how that heel's called in English. I think I ran into that twice before. I should look that up. It's the heel that Cookie A always uses on her socks, and in German it's called Herzchenferse. That's heart heel, I'm pretty sure that's not the English term for that. So, what you do, what I do is I start at the cuff. I do 2x2 ribbing. Down all the way, then I knit a heel flap and stockinette. Then I do the heel turn in a way that makes a little triangle with the point one point at the heel. Then yeah, I pick up stitches. I do the gusset. Gusset is the word I'm using. Searching. Oh, this will be fun. Sorry. I make a gusset and I continue the ribbing on the top of the foot. Yeah, that's it. So they're a bit boring to knit, and you still have to pay attention because you are not going stockinette in the round, but you have the 2x2 ribbing to think about. But still, he loves them, and they're really great projects for yeah, putting in your purse and knitting on the train. And so I made those, and then I started. Oh no, I don't. I think I started them before. I had spun some orange merino silk. I love that in merino silk. I get that all the time from my online supplier. So I already have spun that in orange for a hat and mittens. I have the sock yarn. I have used this in green for my aunt's shawl. I have used this in another green for my mother's knit swirl cardigan. I have it in red, and I try to make sock yarn out of that too. I'll tell you about that later. All those things. I have this orange, yeah, merino silk sock yarn that I think I spun it on a spindle. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And for once, it's really fingering weight. So, and I decided I started the PB&J socks from by Cookie A out of this yarn, and then I decided they were getting too fiddly, and so I ripped them all out. Well, the first one. And started making up my own sock pattern. And I haven't posted pictures of this yet because I still think about maybe publishing it later. But well, in order to publish it, I would have to finish it first. The first sock has gotten past the gusset, so there's only the bit of the foot and the toe to knit left. But I don't know. At the moment, I really love doing mindless things. So everything that needs thought and charts and anything gets pushed aside. And then I'll do another pair of mindless socks for my husband or something. So those socks have been sitting around in a project bag for months now. I still love them and I will finish them eventually, but it will take some time. So I did another pair of socks. Well, I didn't do them. That's the thing. I started knitting a punto by Janissima with some Wollmeise yarn that I had lying around. The color is called something Masala, and it really has this nice orange brown thing going on. It's a solid color, so very well suited to pattern knitting. So I saw those Opuntu socks and I thought, oh, I want to work these. And this hasn't happened a lot lately. I've been drawn to sweater knitting like everybody else because I have a huge drawer full of knitted socks, and most of them in patterns and complicated somethings. But as I said, I like to knit mindless socks at the moment. So I started the Opuntu socks. I like them, but they have all these twisted stitches and cabling. So you really, really have to pay attention. And I'm knitting them on 1.5 millimeter needles. That's size 000. Yeah. Yes. So, and then I came to a point where I had to calculate my, measure my row gauge and then calculate how much longer I would have to go on straight before starting the gusset. The Opuntu socks are done toe up, which is something I don't really like because every single time I miss the point where I should start the gusset, and then I end up with a sock that's either too small or too big and have to rip all back to the toe. This is why I love cuff-down socks much better, because usually the leg is just straight and then you do the heel and then you do the gusset and then you can try the sock on and say, oh, okay, no, it's long enough, I'll start the toe. There are the wishy-washy handspun socks. Those are the ones I already talked about. They're from the BFL that I spun, that I wanted to become the Sherman socks, and that didn't turn out well. I was a bit disappointed in the yarn because the braid, the fiber, when I got it, it's hand-painted, and it had all these bright red and a bit of yellow and purple going on, and so bright and beautiful, and then it spun up and turned out that there was quite a bit of white fiber in the middle. I think that was intentional, and I could have seen it, but I didn't think about it. I just saw the colors and thought, oh, this is bright and shiny and nice and red, and I love it. And then when I spun it, it turned out to be a wishy-washy pink color. I'm not a big fan of pink. The socks, as I said, are okay, but I had hoped for the yarn to be brighter. But I think that's my own fault for not looking at the fiber closely. I also have to say that I'm thinking about dyeing my own fiber right now because often I really want bigger quantities of fiber, not only 100 grams for a pair of socks or a hat or something. And so it's a bit hard to get like 2 pounds of fiber that's dyed all the same color. I also like solids or semi-solids very much. And that's also not so easy to get. And also when if I buy those quantities hand-painted, that's a lot of money. And I can't really afford that to ask a hand dyer to dye me a sweater lot of fiber. So I've been thinking about learning how to dye yarn and fiber for years now. And I just talked about it with my husband last week or so. Yeah, last week it was. And I said, well, I'm thinking about getting the equipment to dye my own fiber. And he was looking at me like, so where do you want to put this? And where would you dye this? I said, well, I could put the pot in the basement on that big table that we have in the laundry room. And and I would dye this in the kitchen. And then I would clean it really thoroughly. And he said, maybe then the kitchen gets cleaned. Yeah, that would be nice. And it turned out when we talked about it that I found that, well, it's rather inevitable that I will dye my own fiber and yarn eventually. So, well, I can just go out and buy the equipment now. So that will be my Christmas present. I have, my parents always give us a bit of money for a present, or they buy something from our Amazon wish list. And so I decided that my parents' gift for me for Christmas this year is a big pot for dyeing yarn. I already have it sitting here in the guest bedroom. It arrived this morning. So I'm pretty excited. I didn't buy the dye stuff yet. So I still have to do a bit of research of what I really need and what I really want and how to do this. And I will for once go a bit slower, not say, oh yeah, I'll start to dye yarn. I buy all the equipment and all the dyes and then go and whoom. But because I can't buy any spinning fiber at the moment, the spinning fiber bins are full, overflowingly full. So I'll take this slow for once. Yeah, what do I have here? Then I started another sweater after finishing the L'Oreal, well, almost finishing the L'Oreal cardigan. I started a Lady Kina because I had two hanks of Wollmeise DK yarn that I bought while I was there, I think the year before. Yeah, it's over a year now. It was fall of 2012. I bought that color. It was called Magnolia, some dark Magnolia or something like that. So I started making the Lady Kina. And have to say that after the first 15 rows or so, it drove me totally crazy because it has, how to explain, it's knitted from top down and it has a kind of ruffle over the bust. So you start the sweater with, I think, garter stitch. And then you increase, I don't know, knit one, knit front and back, knit one, knit front and back. So you have a massive amount of stitches on the needles pretty soon. So you start knitting, you increase, and boom, you have like a third more stitches. And every row takes forever. Because, well, I'm not the skinniest person in the world, and so sweaters for me tend to have a lot of stitches anyway. And so if I do that with a lot of positive ease and with that ruffle thing, I don't know, I couldn't knit it. It was just, the rows were so long and it wasn't going anywhere. And so I ripped that out and started doing the Kriya cardigan. Again, Isolde Teague pattern from the Little Red in the City book. And yeah, that was fun, I have to say. So I made that sweater 3 times. I kid you not. So I started knitting it. And was it? I was almost finished, I think. It went very quickly and it was a lot of fun. The construction is a bit unusual. You start with two little squares of garter stitch, which are they are shoulder part, and then you add the back and front to it, and it's knitted in one piece top down. You have a garter stitch, a yoke thing, and then really small puffy sleeves. I couldn't make the sleeves long because I didn't have enough yarn. So I started knitting it and it was too big, but I didn't mind because most of my sweaters are too small. And so I thought that for once I'd do something with positive ease and then, yeah, which I would be able to close without the buttons, I don't know, falling off in all directions because of all the stress. Yeah, so I knitted that and then I ran out of yarn, predictably, when it was like really cropped. I tried it on again and found that, nah, this wasn't working. So I frogged it and started again. I don't know what I changed. Must have changed something. So I knitted the second version and I think I finished it even. I didn't weave in the ends, but I did everything else. Then I tried it on and it was too short and too big. So then I have to say that I did all the swatching. I did the washing of the swatches. I did the calculations. Everything should have been fine, but it didn't work. I don't know why. And I even think my knitting tightened between the swatch and the actual sweater. So I have no idea. But in the end, I made one size smaller and with a smaller needle. So now it's a bit tight, but it fits me much better because with those puffy sleeves and the garter stitch at the shoulders, this looked just wrong being too big because I have these narrow shoulders and the puffy sleeves were like looking like huge shoulder pads attached to the top of my arm. And so it was, horrible. I wouldn't have worn that. So now I finish it for the third time. And this time it fits pretty well. And of course, since I made it smaller, I had yarn so that I could make it a bit longer. It's not, well, it could have used maybe a few centimeters more, but it's okay. I still have to wash it, but I already wove in the ends, which is, well, something I have a problem with. So, yeah, so that's all I have knitted since February. I did some more things, but those I'll talk about in the next English episode, so a few months or so. Then I started to do crochet again. Well, again, I think the last time I did crochet was when I was 12 or so. But somebody, who was that? Oh, Mod Witch on Ravelry. Her name's Deborah Geary, and she writes the Modern Witch series, which I can really recommend. I didn't want to buy books this year, but then I found hers and have been reading them all like crazy, and now I'm waiting for the next one. So she started making these crochet fingerless mitts. The pattern's called Himbeerwellen by, I think, Tanya Oswald is the designer. And this looks really beautiful. It's done in slip stitch and you do this intricate cable and they're really, really nice and beautiful. But since this was the first time that I crocheted anything in the 30 years, no more, well, more than 30 years, I had a bit of trouble, and especially with getting gauge. So it turns out that while I'm knitting totally loose, so that I ended up, by the way, knitting the DK yarn of the Kriya sweater on two millimeter needles. That's a size zero needle for DK weight yarn. And the fabric's just nice. Could have been a bit tighter, yeah. So, but in crochet, turns out no. I can't just use the crochet hook specified in the pattern. I do need one that's like five sizes bigger or so. So I crochet these fingerless mittens about 20 times or so. First, I had a bit of a hard time to get the slip stitch going to see where I was supposed to, which loop I was supposed to put the hook through. And so, but that's because I have never before done anything that was only slip stitch. Then the mittens were too small. I wasn't able to count the rows. Just she tells you in the pattern to, okay, when you have 8 ribs, then you do this. So I could look at them and say, well, okay, which side's the right side, which the wrong side, are these 8 ribs or are, I couldn't do it. So I started again. I used a bigger hook and another, and each time I crocheted them up until they were almost finished, then I did something wrong and then started over. Then I think I ripped it out one more time, and then I was already using a, I don't know, a 5 millimeter or 4.5 millimeter hook. And I have no idea what that is in US system. No, sorry, can't tell. Pretty big hook for fingering weight yarn. And so I was making the first one for the, 10th time or so, and it was finished and it was beautiful, apart from the seam that was anything but invisible. But then I started making the second one, and I had finished the first one about 3 days earlier, and then I started the second one. Same hook, same yarn, same everything. Came out much, much, much smaller. I don't know why. No, bigger. It was made too big. Yeah, that was the thing. So I started again. Smaller hook, smaller hook, smaller hook yet. I almost finished that one, and turned out it was too small. So I started over. And yeah, I have the pattern memorized by now. So I ended up using a crochet hook that was two sizes smaller for the second one. Yeah, it's really weird. So I finished that, and halfway through the first seam on the first mitten, I had finally figured out how to do the seaming somewhat. And halfway through the second seam, I figured out how to make it so that it was really invisible, which made me then unpick the whole seam, not only on the second mitten, but on the first as well. So I was always looking at it and like, oh no, this will work, and no, it doesn't. So I unpicked it. I managed to unpick the cast-on edge. Yeah, very nice. So I did a bit of surgery there. Of course, I had already woven in all the ends and cut them, and so that was really interesting. So I think I ended up, I don't know, I did some really interesting things with knots and additional pieces of string there. Yeah, but now I have two mittens. I have to say, though, the pattern as written never worked for me, so I had to do like twice the as many rows of slip stitch at the end to make the mitten fit me. And that's really interesting because I have rather small hands and small wrists as well. So I don't know. It's obviously matters of gauge are different for anyone. But so that was a massive project, despite this being, if you know what you're doing, you can knit those in a day or two. But obviously that was a big learning process for me. But I got hooked on crochet again. So, and I already started making a hat for my son. And I'm planning to crochet a hoodie for myself. I already ordered the spinning fiber. Yeah, that's the thing I've been doing lately a lot, is I think about knitting something. I think, oh, it would be a good idea. I should make that. I love that. Then I start researching yarn and find that I don't like that, I don't like that, I don't like the color on this, I don't like that, and this is too expensive. And then I think, oh, I can just spin for it. So right now I have a lot of spinning projects going. And yeah, and my knitting is not going forward all that fast because, I have to spin the yarn first. So, on to spinning. I did spin quite a bit, I think. My big project for this year and for the year before that as well was the orange blue-faced Leicester fiber, because I wanted to make a cardigan for myself. I had 2 pounds of that. I spun it on a spindle. You've heard about this before because it was my Tour de Fleece project for 2012, but it didn't turn out like I wanted it to because I used this corridor fiber, and it was really no fun to spin at all. So I spun that up on the wheel as a worsted weight yarn. So now I have almost 2 pounds of scratchy big yarn, and I don't really know what to do with it. Because it's so scratchy. We'll see. And I have leftover yarn from the, what's it called? Not Vivian. something with vine cardigan. It's another solar cheek pattern. It has a lace yoke and it's sideways. What's it called? Well, vine yoke cardigan, that's the one. I made that and I spun the yarn for it from Brown Corriedale. So maybe I'll do something with the two Corriedale yarns. But this would be perfect for my husband if it weren't orange. But, well, we see. What was I talking about? The Corriedale didn't work out. So I started spinning this orange blue face Leicester. I like the color, but it's a bit flat because this is really totally commercial top. And it's this one color all the way through. Every single fiber is the exact same shade of orange. And with all the hand-painted yarn that and hand-dyed yarn that I'm knitting with, I don't like that anymore. I found that to be a problem with the Sandrine cardigan as well that I knitted. That I love the color, but it's this Cascade 220, and it's the exact same shade of red all the way through. And so this just looks a bit dead and flat to me. And I'd love to have something that's a bit more semi-solid. So it has one color but different shades and it's a bit lighter or brighter in places. But again, that was a question of money as well, because I was thinking about making this cardigan. I already had bought 2 pounds of fiber that didn't work, and I had to, and I have to get the fiber somewhere. I don't really know any hand dyer in Germany who dyes bigger quantities at a time, like a sweater quantity or so. So I bought this orange blue face Leicester and I started spinning it on my Bosworth Mini. I wanted a 3-ply yarn. I made a sample. I even washed it and knitted it up, and it looked beautiful and was perfect for the cardigan I had in mind. And so I started spinning. And then I carried the spindle around for month and didn't really feel it, and pushed it aside and started another spinning project, and then pushed it aside again. And so it didn't really go anywhere and was driving me crazy. And so I decided that this was the thing that I would spin during the Tour de Fleece this year. So I pulled out all the fiber that I had left and the yarn that I had, the singles that I had already spun. And I found that there was a lot of fiber left. I think it was about 900 grams or so. So almost the 2 pounds that I had. So I had only spun very, very little. Despite this being on my list to things to spin and the spindle being there in the project bag with the fiber and everything for a month. So I this time I trained in advance, so because I didn't want to injure myself again with the crazy spinning during Tour de Fleece. So I started spinning on the spindle a lot before Tour de Fleece as well, and that was part of the reason why I spun that other Blue Face Leicester for those socks that didn't turn out to be the Sherman socks, because I wanted to practice spindle spinning and do that for more than 15 minutes at a time. So by the time Tour de Fleece came around, I was in pretty good shape, and I spun for, let me think, I think it was 4 hours on weekends a day and 2 on weekdays. So I did basically nothing else but spin this fiber on this spindle during the whole of the Tour de Fleece. And by doing that, I actually finished, I'm not quite sure I finished all the fiber during Tour de Fleece, but most of it anyways. And soon after I finished it, spinning it in August, or now I remember. So I had a bit, yeah, it took me a bit longer than the Tour de Fleece, but that was a big, big help, doing this every day for an hour or two. That's a lot of spinning, really. And I had to take care not to hold my left hand, that's my fiber hand, too high to not strain my shoulder. So I've been practicing drawing the fiber, everything out to the side, not upwards. So yeah, I've become somewhat better at this. So this was my huge, huge, huge spinning project for the year. I think I'm going backwards with my spinning list right now. If I look at this, let me see. Because the first one on my list that I haven't talked about yet was I had some really gorgeous Paul Worth from the Painted Tiger in fall colors. That was painted as a gradient. And I fractal spun that. And I remember starting to spin this either a year or two. This might have been 2 years ago. And I wanted to spin this very, very fine because I wanted to make a featherweight cardigan out of this. And it took me ages to spin. But I finally finished it. What else? The merino silk for the shawl that I made for my aunt, of course. And then in June, I think I went to a spinning weekend in Niederweier, near the Austrian border. And, I took 100 grams of, well, merino silk again with me, to spin it on my wheel because I've been spinning on spindles a lot this year. And I wanted a wheel project for that weekend. And I wanted to spin sock yarn. And I wanted to spin 4-ply cabled yarn. And this was amazing. I started spinning this on Saturday after lunch, I think. And I finished on Sunday before lunch. And I took breaks and I slept a lot. And we had breaks for eating and talking and everything. And I finished spinning the 100 grams into the cabled yarn. All 4 plies and then plying 2 of the strands together and then plying those 2 together again. And it did even look like sock yarn when it was finished. I was like, oh, I think I finally managed to get it thin enough to be real fingering weight yarn. And I was really excited. And then I washed it at home and then I counted how much yarn I had and turned out it wasn't enough yarn for a pair of socks. So it looks really thin enough. It didn't fluff a lot. It's not heavy because I spun a totally long draw. Still, I don't have enough yardage for a pair of socks. So I thought, well, then I'll just order more of that top and spin it the same way, and then I'll have enough. Turned out I didn't have the color anymore. So now I did order red merino silk. So it's the same fiber combination, but it's a slightly different red. And that's the project that's on my little jam right now, but I'm not really working on it because I'm a bit reluctant. I thought I had the sock yarn and then it didn't really work. And so, yeah. And then I hurt my knee a few weeks ago. I woke up in the morning and my knee hurt and it didn't go away and it got worse and worse. And then I went to the doctor and he said, oh, yeah, you have a what is it? Well, it's arthrosis, and then I have to, I don't know, wear a bandage. And I thought that spinning on the wheel would be a good idea with that painful knee. It's all better now, but I still have to try how spinning goes, but I think I can start spinning on the wheel again. So what else? That was a total impulse project as well. As I said, these days I think, oh, I want to knit some garter stitch mittens. You know, I didn't even put them in my what I've been knitting show notes. Huh. Well, I made the garter stitch mitt again, Isolde Teak. In order to make those, I needed yarn, and I didn't have any, so I took out some merino fiber that I had. I've been working with that a lot. I love the colors. It's like bright pink and red and orange and stripes. And so when you spin it up, I spun it over the fold, you get a really mild yarn. And I love this. So I just thought, oh, I'll just spin some yarn for these mittens. And it took me like half a day or so to spin this. And then I washed it and then I knitted the mittens and I love them. I haven't taken pictures yet, but I will do so next week or so. So I spun that. That was only like 40 grams, a bit more than an ounce, I think. Went really fast. Then I, more sock yarn, I started to, because I still had two bumps of Shetland top in different shades of natural brown, and I didn't quite know what to do with them because the Shetland's too scratchy for me to wear on my skin anywhere, and so I was thinking, well, maybe sock yarn. Because lately that's what I've been thinking. Every time I look at my stash, I have all these 100 grams or 4 ounce braids of something. And and I'm not knitting all that many small projects at the moment, I think. And so I've been thinking what to do with all these colors, what to do with all this fiber. And then I thought, well, socks. That's the idea. I'll make sock yarn out of all of these 100 gram braids. And so I thought, well, maybe Shetland isn't a bad choice for socks because I can, on my feet, if the yarn's more scratchier, I don't think I'll mind as much. And maybe I could use them for socks for my husband who can tolerate more scratchiness than me. And if they're too scratchy for his feet, he often wears the hand-knitted socks on top of commercial cotton socks. So the scratchiness wouldn't be as much of a problem. So I started spinning the lighter brown Shetland on my antique wheel. I bought that, I don't know, 2 years ago, maybe, from a friend. And it spins, and it spins pretty well, but there's a wooden screw missing that fixes the maiden or the mother of all. I always confuse the two. With the part where the flyer sits, and so the screw would be helping regulate the distance between the drive wheel and the flyer. So there is another screwy thing that fixes the position of the flyer, but that's not, you can't put it that tight. So in the course of spinning, the flyer will slip to the right, nearer to the drive wheel, and then throw the band off. And so this is really annoying. You have to... I should get this to somebody who can make me a replacement screw, maybe. But otherwise, the wheel spins really, really well. And so I've spun that Shetland yarn up into 3-ply sock yarn. And it went pretty fast, too. But as often these days, the 3-ply sock yarn that I had... in the end, it looks like fingering weight yarn. It behaves like fingering weight yarn. It doesn't have the yardage of fingering weight yarn. It only has something like 200 and something meters per 100 grams. And I need at least 320 or so for, 300. I need at least 300 meters for a pair of socks. So there I was, not enough yarn again. I'm getting a bit frustrated about this, I have to say. And but I had still another bump of Shetland fiber that was pretty similar, but a darker brown. So now I'm spinning that up. And I hope it will turn out the same as the brown Shetland. And then I'll make striped socks. But as I said, I'm a bit frustrated about the sock yarn spinning. What else? And then I started spinning yet more Blueface Lester. This time it's dyed green by Knitting Spiro again. And the base is striped Blueface Lester. So you have the white and the oatmeal and the brown Blueface Lester in stripes in the top. And she dyed that in a really nice green that's a bit like olive green with maybe a bit more yellow in it. I like the color. I like the top. And I decided to spin that into a three-ply yarn, but to make one of the plies go the other way around than the first two. I got that idea from the is it Susan B. Anderson's books, Yarn, what's it called? About making yarn and designing shit. Big Book of Yarn Design, something like that. I'll put that in the show notes. You all know the book. And if you don't, go and buy it. It's really, really good. Can't remember. Spinner's Book of Yarn Design. I think it's the Spinner's Book of Yarn Design. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So that was the spinning. I also started weaving. No. You know that already. Yeah, of course. But I wove a bit more. I decided to make all my leftover sock yarn into a blanket. So I pulled out all the green and blue, warped the rigid head loom, and wove on that. And I don't know, then it lingered for a while. But over the summer, I started again. So I wove on that, and I have finished the first half of the blanket. And then I decided that I really wanted to weave some dish towels. And I got myself some cotton for weaving, orange and brown. But I didn't really pick the right brown, I have to say. It's a bit too grayish and flat. It's not a nice brown, and it doesn't really play all that well with the orange I got. But, well, that's the yarn I got. I didn't want to return it, so I just used that. I only have finished about half a dish towel yet. So the weaving has been sitting there for weeks. I find that weaving is not something that I do pull out. I have 10 minutes, so let's weave. Because I have to get the loom out from the bedroom, have to put it in the kitchen. I'm weaving at the kitchen table, so the kitchen table needs to be totally empty. And I won't start weaving half an hour before dinner, for example. So, and I have this feeling that I really need a bit of time, a bigger chunk of time for the weaving. So this is mostly a weekend thing if I have nothing else going on. So I don't think I'll be weaving a lot in the future, but still like the loom. Of course, I would love to have a bigger one, but even the flip, I have the biggest flip there is, so it's not that small, but I've been thinking about maybe getting the stand for it so that I could didn't have to balance it on my knees. And where I'm sitting at the kitchen table, if I position myself just right, everything's okay. But if I sit too far to the left, then I always bump my hand on the fridge. And so I thought, well, having it on a stand would be really nice. And but then I thought about it and think, well, every time I stop weaving, I have to put it together again. I have to fold it and store it in the bedroom. So if I had the stand, I would have to get the loom off the stand, fold the loom, then, disassemble the whole stand, store that somewhere, I don't know where. So I thought, well, and I couldn't leave it all together and put it somewhere, because the only place where I would have space enough to leave it would be my studio where I teach. And it is okay to have a spinning wheel sitting there in a corner, but I can't put the big stand with the loom right in the middle of the studio where I'm teaching. And that would interfere with teaching too much. So I'll leave it at the kitchen table right now. Well, mostly in the bedroom, but when I'm weaving, I'll pull it out, put it on the kitchen table, and I have to make do with that for now. So weaving, yeah. And then, I don't know if you remember, I decided to make a lot of things for my wardrobe this year. That was my big, big project and plan. Yay, hasn't happened so much. So, how was it? I started making an orange cotton skirt. And I had to draft a completely new pattern because I had gained weight and the pattern that I made a year before didn't fit me anymore. So I started the skirt, I put it together, and then it didn't fit. I think I've sewn the waistband of the skirt 3 times already and picked it apart again because it didn't work. So that's where I stand right now. First skirt, not finished. But I have decided that December this year will be the month of sewing. I'm still pretty sure I can, if I apply myself, I can do all the sewing that I planned for this year, but it's a bit weird to do it all in December, but that's what might happen. So sewing again is one of those things that in my mind require bigger chunks of time and a head where there's space. Head space is something I find really hard to combine with all these things that are in my life, with family and house and work and chores and I don't know, people and knitting and spinning and so on. So I can sew something on the weekends, no problem. I can even sew during the week if I really want to. The time where that would be most convenient for all would be in the evenings when I'm mostly almost dead and can't think straight anymore. And I don't know. So I'll have to check that and see how this will be going. But I still plan to do those clothes. And the other thing is that in the first half of the year, I gained weight like crazy, but since June I've been losing weight. So right now my size is a rather moving target. So if I leave something that I'm sewing for more than 2 months, it won't fit anymore. So that has been a bit of a problem with the motivation. So if I make something that fits me right now and everything goes like I wanted to, it won't fit me in the summer again. But well, on the other hand, I can learn a lot. I can, and if I make something right now and I still lose weight, I can still take it in and make it smaller. That's not much of a problem. But still, that's been one of those things. I'll do it next weekend. So we'll see. I really want to make more of my own clothes, not only the sweaters and the socks, but and the skirts too, and maybe pants and dresses. So this is all that I've worked on. Oh, we're over an hour and a half now. So now I'll tell you a bit about the topics I had in my last 9 episodes, just a bit. So everything I talked about in the last 9 episodes. So the first episode, number 31, was on spinning sock yarn. You might have guessed already, I was a bit obsessed with spinning sock yarn in those past month. I've always tried to come to a point where I can spin as fine as I want to. But these days I'm doing a lot of long draw with really squishy and bouncy fibers. So I spin this very, really fine thread. Then I wash it and it poofs up and yay, I have sport weight again, or DK weight, when all I wanted was sock yarn or maybe lace weight. So this is one of my goals, to learn how to spin real fingering weight yarn. I think I'm coming closer. And the other thing is that mostly for my hand-spun socks, I don't have that many. I have 3 pairs maybe. And 2 of them have holes already. So most of my hand-spun socks have been spun out of merino, which is nice and soft and cushy, but not the most durable of fibers. So I've been trying to start spinning socks from other fibers that are maybe not too scratchy, but last a bit longer. I have trying to make the yarn with more twist, so that it might be a bit more durable, and I've been trying other things. So spinning sock yarn was my first topic, and I in that episode I put together a list of links to where people talk about spinning sock yarn. I had Reverie posts, I think, by Abby Francomont and some other things. As for everything, if you're interested in any further links to the topic I'm talking about, you can go back and look the links up in the podcast episodes where I originally talked about them. So you go on the podcast category on the blog, and then you look up episode 31, and there will be a link to all those posts I talked about in that episode. So I talked about how Judith McKenzie says that you have to spin for socks, it has to be a 3-ply at least, and it has to be worsted spun, so a really tight worsted spun, so that it will the socks will last longer. What else? I don't know. I pulled out my spinning books and I looked up how people talked about that. And usually people tell you that, for instance, that chain plied yarn won't hold up as well as a 3-ply. That some people say no, that's not true. Most people tell you not to use very, very soft fiber like merino. Most people tell you to spin fine with a lot of twist and maybe worsted spin with a very short draw, and to make the socks out of more than 2-ply. 3-ply is good, 4-ply might be better. So I talked about all of that. I'm still not quite sure myself how to make the best sock yarn, and I haven't really succeeded in making the sock yarn I want, but I won't stop trying. My episode 32 was about the question, how many knitting books are too many? So I have a bit of a problem here with space, with the stash. I'm pretty good with the spinning stash, mostly. But just the other day I ordered 6 pounds of merino, and I'm not quite sure where to put them. So I have to spin them up quick, so that eventually that will be a sweater, and there's still a bit of space in my closet. So that will work out. Excuse me. Oh, I've been talking a long time already. So, yeah, and one of the problems that I have is that I love to buy knitting books and spinning books and books in general. But with the, with the fiction and most of the nonfiction that I read, space isn't as much a problem as it used to be because most books I just buy as ebooks. And so far, I still have space on my ebook reader left. But with knitting books and such, I usually like it better to have the book on paper. When it has a lot of pictures, it's much nicer to read it as an actual book. So So I have the maximum amount of bookcases I can have in this house. I already have, and they're all full, over full. But for my craft books, I only have a very small bookcase in the bedroom. And so my question was, do I really need to buy more books? And if so, what do I do with them? And other thing is that I'm not really knitting anything from the books I buy usually. But so most of the pattern that I knit are some that I buy online and as a PDF, which is good because those don't need shelf space. I no longer print them out. These days I have a mini iPad and I usually put them on there. With the Goodreader app, so I can make notes on the PDF and I can put like a ruler on and tells me where I am in a chart and everything. So I don't really need that much shelf space for that. But yeah, the books. So what I have decided after much debate is that what I really need is another shelf for craft books in the bedroom, but still then I'll have a place to put all the books I already have, but anything that I buy in the future, yeah. So as with everything, there comes a point where you have to throw things out again. I've not quite reached that point with the knitting books, but I think I'm pretty close. So episode 33 had the topic, the to-sew list. So it turns out I wasn't sewing, but I still have a long, long list of sewing projects that I want to make. And some of them I have been wanting to make for years. For example, I really, really want a bag for my rigid header loom. I had wanted to buy the bag that Schacht makes for the loom, but turned out that the dealer I bought it from only had the bag that doesn't fit my loom because it's too big for the bag. And I could have ordered it from the US, but ordering a $50 bag plus customs and shipping. So I thought, I can make that myself, and I could totally make myself a bag for my rigid header loom with a little extra pocket for all the reeds and shuttles and such. And I already have thought about this a lot, and it wouldn't be too hard. I have made bags in the past, but I still, one day I really want to make that bag. But what I really want is I want to have that bag. And then I have other things, like I wanted to make placemats, I wanted to make napkins, I wanted to make spindle bags, and especially I want to make a little pyramid bag for my small Turkish, because usually when I lug that around, I put it in a knit go pouch. And what I don't like about that is that the KnitGo pouch is a bit too big for the bag and it's not padded. Well, I have a tiny Turkish that is from Threads Through Time Thomas Creations is the maker, I think. And this is a really sturdy, nice spindle, but still I'd like to have just a bit of padding to it. And for my other spindles as well. So my ideal would be that every single spindle has its own bag where I can fit the spindle in and a bit of fiber. Yeah, so that has been a project. Or I don't know, mostly those small things, a bag here and a pouch there. But I never can bring myself to sew anything up. So that was what I was thinking about in that episode. The list that I have, it's not an actual list, it's only my head. It's like, oh, I want to make this. Oh, I could make this. Oh, this would be handy. And then I never make it. Next episode then, I talked about the problem with motivation. I think that was the episode where I had to spin endless amounts of orange fiber for the Tour de Fleece. And it was getting really boring and really repetitive. And however much I spun, I still had this huge ball of fiber left over. And I had this feeling that I was spinning for hours and hours and hours and hours. And the fiber wasn't getting any less. It was just still a huge blob of fiber. And then I decided to... what did I do? I divided the whole thing, that whole huge ball of fiber, into, I think, 20 gram strips. Because that was what I could spin in a day. Just if I did nothing else but spin. But I wanted to spin 20 grams a day. So I pulled it all into roughly 20 gram strips. I had 42 of those, I think. Yeah. And the funny thing was that after that point, the spinning became much easier. And I think the 20 grams was what I could fit comfortably on my spindle as well. So, since I was making a three ply, I knew that I had these 320 three balls of singles, and each had 20 grams, and I could ply that and then have a roughly 60 gram ball of yarn, which is a reasonable amount. Not, well, I wouldn't like it to be much smaller, but it's okay to knit with. And so that's what I did. And afterwards, the spinny became so much more enjoyable because I didn't have the huge blob and ball of fiber, but I just had the chunk. So I say, okay, I'll spin this chunk. Oh, I'm done. So, oh, I spin this chunk. Oh, I'm done. So the whole thing became much easier. And the only thing I changed was my perception, because tearing off a chunk and spinning it off the huge ball felt like, oh, it's only a small chunk. But tearing off the 20 grams and saying, okay, this is my task for the day. And, oh, I made it. And that felt much better. So from there, I went to all the... Like when you knit a huge sweater, and mine are all huge, can't be helped, they have to fit. So you're knitting away on the part where the sweater is the widest. And you knit and knit and knit and knit, and you feel like this is what the yarn holic calls the black hole of knitting. You knit for hours, and the sweater is still the same length it was when you started. So at times like those, I usually like to put a stitch marker at the place where I started that day. And then when you stop knitting for that day, you see, oh, I knitted all those rows. So you can actually see progress better. And all those things are those little tricks that help you when making something. So then the episode 35 was about spinning sock yarn again. At that point, I had acquired the Spinner's Book of Yarn Design and had read the parts that dealt with making sock yarn. And I was talking about that mostly. So what the author had found was that she made several pairs of socks where one sock had, so both socks had the same fiber, and she had spun them as similar as she could, and then she had used different plying structures. For example, she had a pair of socks where one sock was made out of a three ply, regular three ply, and the other was made out of chain plies, three ply. Then she had, I don't know, she made a four ply, she made cabled yarn, different things. All the same fiber, all worn the same. Yeah, all worn the same. And then she made notes when which ones got holes first or wore the best. And so she found that the sock yarn that wore the best was, for one, the chain ply. Though when the yarn broke, there was a bigger hole than on the regular three ply. But the yarn wore better, interestingly. The cabled sock yarn four ply was the best wearing, I think, and the one where she did a three ply, where one ply was spun in a different direction than the other two, and then the whole the three plies were plied in the direction of that one strand. So things like that. I talked about that a lot, and I still have to verify any of this. And that is why I have been spinning this cabled yarn for socks and that three ply where I do the third ply in the third strand in the other direction. Sorry. But I'm still not quite sure. I'm spinning this three ply. I am at the point where I'm spinning the fourth single. I divided the fiber into six equal parts, and I'm spinning the fourth part of that. So after that, I have to decide whether I really want to go through with this and spin the last third in the other direction or not. I'm still not quite sure, but I did want to try the whole thing out, so we'll see. The episode after that, I talked about Knit to Flatter. This was prompted mostly by the book by Amy Herzog that I got, the Knit to Flatter book, and I think it's excellent. But Amy Herzog and I have different opinions about things at times. So, and the main thing that I thought about, and I'm still not quite sure what my position on this is that there is this thing that you should dress in a way that flatters you. I think it's a good thing to know how to dress in a way that makes you look good if you want to, but I think you're totally allowed to wear things that don't suit you if you want to. Like I'm totally pale, and when I wear black I look pretty sick and ashen gray, but I still do it because I like it. So I like the t-shirt, so I wear it, but it doesn't make me look good. Things like that. On the other hand, if you know how to dress to flatter your body, you can then go on and ignore it. But if you don't really know, you're a bit at a disadvantage. Now, the thing is, so her tips are pretty good. So if you're figure is like this or like that, and she doesn't only go like the apples and pears and something, so she differentiates a bit more than that, and the book is really good. I think she does all the sweaters in parts, and they're sewn together. I don't like that, but I'm not quite sure. It has been a long time. So the thing is, I should wear sweaters that have all their ornamentation, color work and such on the top. I should never wear long sleeves. And I should always wear like deep necklines. And those look good on me. But what if 3/4 sleeves make my hands totally cold and then my fingers get white? So I don't want to knit sweaters with 3/4 sleeves, no matter how good they might look on me. So I was talking a lot about that and telling a bit about the book, but I think most everybody should have seen that by now. The book is, as I said, it's very good. My taste's a bit different from Amy Herzog, so I won't probably knit anything out of it. I took away some things I didn't really do, as always. It tells you, get a picture of yourself, and then you draw in all those lines, and that tells you what kind of figure you have. So in my case, I don't really need to draw any lines. I can stand in front of a mirror and see, okay, broad hips, narrow waist, big bust, narrow shoulders, yeah. And what I really liked was that she also took into account the way that you look from the side, because people have different bulges or places where they don't bulge when looked at from the side, like so, and that's something that not a lot of people talk about when telling you how to dress. So that was excellent too. So then episode 37 was about shopping spree and spinning wheel dreams. I'm not even quite sure what I bought, but I had this sudden urge of wanting to buy things, and I was obsessively looking at spinning wheels and thinking about, oh, I want this, and I want this, and I want this too. And so I was thinking about this. I think this is really a seasonal thing for me, that usually around my birthday and around Christmas, I'm thinking about things that I want to have, and I tend to buy stuff. I'm usually pretty restrained, but then there are I don't know, about twice a year I get like, okay, I want this now, click, and then I order it. But all within reason. I think I ordered two more heddles for my rigid heddle loom and some yarn and a bit of fiber, and then there was this. As you might know, I have two spinning wheels right now. I have an antique wheel that I don't know who made it or something, but it's a flex wheel. And then I have the Majorcraft Little Gem. And I love the Little Gem very much. But I still, from time to time, I think that I might like to have something like the Suzy Pro as well, because it's a bit more versatile and it can spin a bit faster and it has the accelerate head and things like that. So sometimes I think, oh, that would be nice to have. And another spinning wheel that I've been thinking about is the Loué Victoria, because it's so small and portable. So my Little Gem is really portable and lightweight, and it still has most of the features that bigger wheels have. So I can spin with a lot of ratios. I have a lace flyer. I could have a bulky flyer and all kinds of things. So you can make any kind of yarn on that. But since I'm aiming for thin high twist yarn all the time, I'm sometimes thinking that maybe a wheel that can go a bit faster would be nice. Yeah, and then on the other hand, a wheel that's smaller and easier to take with me. But on the other hand, I'm not going places a lot with the wheel. And when I'm traveling on vacation, I usually only take spindles, because any wheel, as small and lightweight as it might be, is still bigger and heavier than a spindle, and I can make everything on a spindle that I want. So that was that episode. And there was one listener, a woman who at this point, she does knit and she has been thinking about learning how to spin, but she's a bit hesitant because she doesn't have a lot of time and thinks that maybe if she started yet another hobby would be a bit too much. And then I made that episode where I said, oh yeah, and everybody wants more than one wheel and what you really need is three or four. Then she said, okay, I won't take up spinning because there's no way I can afford three or four wheels. So I had to tell her, and this is really important, that all that spinning really takes is fiber and one spindle. And you can make a lot of yarn and a lot of different kinds of yarn with just that equipment. But still. Then the episode after that, that was 38, I talked about the project. As I said, I had the project wardrobe was my big thing this year that I'd sew. I think I said I'd make two skirts, pajama pants, a dress, and a tunic. I think that was it this year. So I set out in January saying, okay, this is what I do this year. I'm sewing all the clothes. And then I had to say, I'm not really, progress isn't so much. I have one almost finished skirt and I started thinking about why I hadn't gone forward on this, and some of the reasons I already told you, because my weight is shifting, so I don't know if I will be able to wear that. And while I started sewing more than 30 years ago, 35 or so, I still am not very good at sewing because I never did a lot of it. It was always like, make myself a shirt and another one and then not sew anything for 2 years. So I know a lot about sewing. I know how it goes. I haven't sewn a lot. And I always tried to sew from commercial patterns, of course, and they never fit me. And these days I now finally know why. And I know a lot about how to change those patterns or draft my own, but I'm still a rather beginning sewist. So, we'll see how that goes. I still want to make more of my own clothes, but I still haven't so far. And the last episode before this one, I talked about time management, or how do I get big projects small and small ones done? I've been thinking about time management more this last few weeks because I have more on my plate. I don't quite know why, but I was depressed most of the past years, mostly because of hormonal reasons. And now I'm taking all kinds of supplements and stuff, and I finally feel like myself again. But that also means that I wake up and I see all these piles of things I have from the time I was depressed and didn't really get anything done. And now I have to deal with my life as is, all the things I want to do, all the things I have to do, and those massive piles of things I neglected for years. And that's a bit much. And so I've been thinking about how I use my time and what I do with my time more, because I'm, especially when I'm depressed, I spend a lot of time on Reverie and surfing blogs, and that's all very nice. But if I do that for 3 hours or 4 hours a day, those are hours where I don't get anything done, really. It's nice to chat with my friends, but yeah, so balance. And so I've been doing that again. And then I had a point where I had this feeling that I had all these projects and I couldn't really get a grip on them. I used to track my projects, like spinning, like house-related stuff, like everything in a software to-do list thing. So you list all the steps, and it shows up when at a time when you like the getting things done system. I don't know if you know that. So you have context related to-do lists. So when you're at the grocery store, you get the things to buy at the grocery store list. And when you're in front of your computer, you look at your what I need to do at the computer list. And when you have a bit of time to get on the phone, you have your call whom to call list. So you don't see everything that you need to do all at once all the time, but you manage it differently. So I tried that and had all these projects. And for a lot of projects, I didn't even track anything. If I knit a pair of socks, usually I just cast on and knit a pair of socks. But I found that that wasn't working for me anymore. There were all these things laying around the house in piles again, things I had started, things I wanted to make, things I was about to forget that I want to make. And I don't know. So I sat down and I took index cards and I made one card for each project that I had, and also a card for each product that I wanted to do in the future. And I have a blog post on my blog. The post before the one with the show notes for this episode has a description of the system that I'm using at the moment, and it's working very well because I pull those index cards out about every week, and then I can see, oh, didn't work on that, why was that? And I can troubleshoot it or say, okay, this is one project I don't really want to work on at the moment, so I put it in another folder, say, okay, this comes in the on the wait list, it's not urgent, I'm not doing it right now. So and that helps me get a better overview of what I'm doing with my life right now, what I want to achieve, what's possible and what not. And the other thing that I didn't talk about in the episode, but that has become more important over the past 2-3 weeks, was that I have started to reestablish my daily routines. Like, I get up on weekdays early enough to make breakfast for my son who goes to school. And so I have been setting my alarm for half an hour before I have to actually get up. And that was used to be the time where I wrote in my journal. And then I stopped doing that because I was tired all the time. But now I'm a bit better at going to bed on time. And so I actually, in the morning, when the alarm goes off, sit up and write in my journal before doing anything else. And that makes me feel better throughout the day. Or after breakfast, when my son's already at school, I usually sit and knit and read. And I've found that when at that time, that's a good time for me to write stories. Or at the moment, I'm working on revising the novel I wrote last November during National Novel Writing Month. So that's a good time to do that. And if I don't do it right in the morning after breakfast, the chances that I do it sometime else in the day are slim. So I sit there and I work on that for an hour or so before my husband gets up. And then the whole day is bright and shiny because I have worked on the most important thing first. Things like that. Yeah. And I could go on for hours about things like time management and project management, but I won't because now it's time to make lunch. Sorry. But I hope you've enjoyed the episode nonetheless. You can find me on my blog at creativemother.de. You can send me an email at creativemother@web.de. That's web.de. And I'm on Twitter as Free Jazz Mama. I'm on Pinterest as Sweet Free Jazz Mama. I'm on Reverie as Creative Mother. And so I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I really hope that the last English episode won't be 9 months ahead, but maybe a bit earlier, because I tried to record every other week. I didn't manage to actually do it, but I got a bit better, so I hope that I will get into a better rhythm with the episodes, and so you won't have to wait for as long, I hope. So I hope you enjoyed it, and I wish you happy knitting until next time. Ciao. Da da do da 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 da